Morning, everyone. So Adam and Jan gave you a great insight into the attention of detail that we pay when designing great user experiences for the browser. That attention to detail permeates throughout the entire browser team, including how we think about and approach security. As a security program manager on the Edge team, my main contributions are towards our objective to protect our customers by shipping the most secure browser we can on Windows. And our strategy for achieving this objective is to make it difficult and costly to find, exploit, and leverage software vulnerabilities. And as you may imagine, this is really hard. This is not an easy problem to solve. And there's a few reasons, several reasons why that's the case. I'm going to highlight just a couple of them. The first of which is the web is really complicated. I'm sure I don't have to tell you all of that, but the web is quickly moving. There are all kinds of new features. You can now have real-time video chats with people across the globe. You can watch people live stream them playing video games on their computer. There's complicated 3D applications and now 4K streaming. All of these great features introduce a lot of new churn in the code. The code has to constantly change and get more and more complicated. The more complicated the code becomes, the higher a chance that a vulnerability or a mistake may be present. The second reason is that attackers are more sophisticated than they've ever been. We're no longer dealing with just teenagers in their bedroom pulling pranks on their classmates or their teachers. These are highly motivated and well-funded attackers who have very specific goals in mind and won't stop until they achieve them. And in some cases, these attackers are backed by actual nation states or governments. The third reason is there's a lot of money on the line. Vulnerabilities on the black market will sell for tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So there's a lot of people who are invested in this purely because they want to make a lot of money. And so these are some of the challenges that we face. So when we look at this on the Edge team and we're trying to figure out how exactly are we going to solve this problem, how are we going to make sure that our customers are protected against these highly skilled and highly motivated attackers? What we came up with is a strategy we like to call the four guards. We have two guards that are designed to prevent attacks that occur from the disk. What we mean by this is an attacker has some sort of browser vulnerability, they're operating, they're running code within the browser, and they are attempting to load their code or their payload. This payload may be trying to steal your files, steal your passwords, monitor you, things like that, and load it within our process and run it. The two guards we have to protect against this is what we call code integrity guard and arbitrary code guard. The second attacks that we design these guards to protect against are attacks that occur in memory. What we mean here is the attacker wants to manipulate the code that is already running within the browser and reconfigure it to run their payload and to do what they want and run their instructions, not the browser's. The two guards we have to protect against this or what we call control flow guard, and then a guard we haven't named yet, so I took the liberty to call it the fourth guard. And as you can imagine, the marketing team just won't stop calling me. So how do we actually build these guards? How do we build these mitigations in place? Well, it's very simple to making a great recipe. If you start off with really strong and really great ingredients and give them the great chefs, they're going to make amazing meals. And the same thing happens with software, and the same thing happens at Microsoft. In Microsoft, we're in a unique position where we own the browser, we own the code, and have control of the browser, and we have incredibly brilliant people working on the browser. Second, we control the operating system. We have write the code for the operating system, we design, deliver, ship the features that involved in the operating system and our kernel. And finally, we control the tooling and the tools that are used to build both of those. And so when you combine these three things and you give them to brilliant chefs or amazing researchers or engineers that we have at Microsoft, they're gonna build truly incredible features. Some of which you'll see all the time when you're browsing the web, like the service workers, web VR, some of the talks we have coming up. Some of them you'll never see. And that's by design. Some of the security mitigations that I'm going to talk about, you will actually never see them in practice, but they're doing a lot of work behind the scenes. So let's talk about what attackers are actually trying to accomplish. The first thing an attacker does when they're trying to attack you through the browser is they try to find a vulnerability. The way they do this is either reviewing open source components in the browser or by doing dynamic testing such as fuzzing, where they just generate a lot of random HTML and JavaScript and try to get the browser to crash in a way that they can control. Once they have the vulnerability, they're now executing their code, and so they're gonna try to deliver their payload. The second step is they try to load their code. This would mean from the tab process, they try to download some binary that they've written, some C++ code, and they want to execute it, and that leads to what we call arbitrary native code execution, which is a really fancy phrase, but it's an important distinction. I'm not talking about JavaScript code that's running on a web page that's contained within our sandbox in a controlled environment. What I mean here is that the attacker is actually running C++ code in the browser process as if they were the browser and has all the capabilities of the browser, such as reading your passwords or taking your files. So how do we prevent against the attacker's ability to load code? Well, that's our guard we call code integrity guard. And the way we talk about this is, if you look at the diagram, we talk about the tab process, which is the blue box above the dotted line, and the Windows kernel, which is the green box below. What happens is an attacker attempts to load malicious code. So what the attacker does, they're now running inside of our tab process. They go to the memory manager in the kernel and they say, hey, I have some C++ code. I would like you to load this in the process so that I can run it. What the memory manager does is the memory manager looks and checks, is this properly signed? What we mean by this is, just like your website running on HTTPS, has an SSL certificate, has a certificate that validates that when the user goes to their website, they know that they're going to your website and getting your content. We have the same concept within the operating system. The binaries or the code that we're running on Windows are signed by Microsoft. And so we have a certificate that we sign these binaries with that allow it to load. If the memory manager detects that the binary is properly signed, then we allow it to load in the process. And this allows us to load things like the graphics drivers, the JavaScript engine, all the other modules that make the browser work. However, if it detects that the code is not properly signed, such as the attacker's code, because they don't have control of our certificate, they can't pretend to be Microsoft, then we deny that code from being able to load. So if you look at the path we have, our roadmap to from vulnerability to getting code exploitation, we sort of cut off the attacker's ability to load their own code. So attackers are relentless, and they pivot just like anyone else would. And so they started to try to generate and modify code pages. What we mean is they try to create their own little area in the tab process where they can just load their own code directly there and execute it. To protect against this, we have a guard that we call arbitrary code guard. Arbitrary code guard really states three things. The first is that code is immutable. What we mean is when the process starts, the code that is there when it starts up is what is going to be run. The second is that data cannot become code. What we mean by this is HTML content, JavaScript content, things that are downloaded from the web and running in the tab process, those can't be confused as being actual browser code. There's a clear distinction between the two. And the third point is the kernel enforces that there are no writable or executable code pages. So what does that mean in practice? Well, if we go back to the diagram we use for code integrity guard, I'm really bad with clickers, by the way. If we look at the diagram for arbitrary code guard where we have our tab process and we have the Windows kernel again, this time the attacker goes to the memory manager and says, hey, I would like some part in the process where I can write to and then can also execute from. And the memory manager says, sure, I will create a code page in this process. This is a little area inside of our tab process that the attacker can use. The attacker then places their malicious payload inside of this little box, and they execute it, and they're off to the races, and they can do anything that our tab process can do. Well, let's look at this again when we apply arbitrary code guard to the process. What ends up happening is When the attacker goes to ask the memory manager for a writable and executable memory, when they're asking for that box to be placed inside the process, the memory manager returns and says, dynamic code is blocked. You are not allowed to ask for writable and executable memory, and the kernel has more privilege than the browser. It is sort of the boss in this situation, and it just outright says, no, we're not going to allow you to create any dynamic code within our process. Now, the astute listeners on this presentation will be thinking about this and saying, you're blocking all dynamic code in the tab process. How do you not break the internet? What about JavaScript? JavaScript in its nature is dynamic. The whole point of JavaScript is that we can create these enriched dynamic web pages. How do we get things like streaming video or WebGL games if we can't load graphics drivers because they need to have these capabilities as well? Well, we thought about this, and so we did several things. The first is we created a separate process that allows Chakra to continue to function. Chakra, as you heard about in the keynote, is our JavaScript engine, and this will you'll hear much more about in a talk later today. But we've created a separate process away from the tab that allows Chakra, in order to compile the JavaScript code, optimize the JavaScript code, create all the code pages it wants, then it can map its code page back into the tab process. That way, if the attacker is within that tab process, they can't create their own little nest to run their code, but Chakra is allowed to. For graphics drivers, we work with our partners at Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA, amongst other vendors, to start releasing new drivers and graphics drivers that are aware of arbitrary code guard. This means when that graphics driver is running within our process and it's doing something like handling a Skype call over the internet or watching a Netflix video, if they receive that dynamic code blocked error, they know how to handle it. They're aware that that error could happen, and they have safe fallbacks that prevent the browser from crashing. And finally, the only way we could ship this with any confidence is from telemetry that came from our insiders. This is from the Windows Insider program that you heard about in the keynote. We use data and telemetry from the Insider program to gain us a lot of confidence in shipping this feature. Without that data, we would have been flying in the dark and had no idea if we were going to break the internet or not. So this telemetry was vital and able to ship this really disruptive security mitigation. So for all of you in the Windows Insiders program, I greatly thank you for helping get this feature out the door. So let's go back to our little map here. We already cut off the attacker's ability to load their code with our code integrity guard. We use arbitrary code guard to prevent the attacker's ability to generate and modify code pages. So the attackers then decided to go for a third pivot. The third pivot is they wanted to hijack the browser code itself. And this is a technique we call return-oriented programming. What they're trying to do is the edge program has a list of instructions that are being run, and the attacker is trying to manipulate those instructions and get them to run in a different order that allows them to do something that they want, something malicious, read files and send it to their web server, things like that. So there's really two ways you can hijack the browser's code. You can either corrupt a function pointer, and this is a C++ concept where you have a pointer that points to some sort of function in the code. They can either corrupt one of those to, instead of pointing to an edge function, points to an attacker function, or they can corrupt a return address. And this is also from C++. This is the address when you call a function and the function you call exits, it knows where to go back to. The attacker tries to corrupt that address, so instead of returning back to where that function was called from, it returns to an attacker-controlled function that they place somewhere else. So to help protect against the corruption of function pointers, we created a mitigation called Control Flow Guard. Now, Control Flow Guard works in two main stages. The first is at compile time. This is when we're actually building Edge inside our campus in Redmond, when we're actually running it through our tooling. We record and store all the indirect function calls that may happen within the code. Now, to help think about this, if you imagine that the browser, Edge, is a train running on the tracks, what we mean here is before we leave the station and go to our destination, we record all the possible junctions that we may take along our path, and we store those to give them to all the other operators so that they're aware of them. The second stage of control flow guard happens when we're actually running the browser. So this is when the train is about to leave the station. What it does is it informs the operating system where all of these indirect calls can occur. The train operator from the station that the train is leaving from calls ahead to all the operators down the path from the source to the destination and says, hey, here's where this train can be redirected to. Please be aware of it. Then when the process boots up, when Edge launches, the operating system takes note of all of these possible junctions and stores it. So this would be all of the operators receiving that call and putting down in their notebook, okay, I know at this point the train may veer off to this track, and that's okay. That is allowed to happen. Then when we go to actually come across one of these junctions or one of these indirect jumps, the operating system checks, hey, is this a jump that I knew about? Did they tell me this was possible beforehand? Because what an attacker is trying to do is they're trying to break into the train yard and trying to put their own track in that gets directed to their stations. So we're trying to prevent that type of attack. So when we come across a junction, the operator is going to look at their list and say, hey, is this junction, this train about to go on, is this something that we knew about before? Were we aware that this junction could occur? If it does, then they let the train go on. There's no hindrance to the speed of the train. They don't slow it down. It just continues running along its destination. However, if we determine that, hey, this is a junction we don't know, we don't see on our list, we're not aware the browser could do this, they halt the train in a safe manner to prevent it from ever getting on the attacker's tracks. In this case, the operating system shuts down the browser and prevents it from being able to make that jump to the attacker-controlled code. And because we own the tooling and we own the operating system, we're able to do this. We're able to sort of inform the operating system, build this feature and say, hey, here are all the indirect jumps we can take, and make it so that normal usage of the browser continues to work. So now if we go back to the map of how we hijack the browser code, Control Flow Guard really disrupts their ability to corrupt the function pointers. So the last thing they can do is corrupt the return address, which, like as I said earlier, is that memory address or that map that tells the code when you're done running a function, where did you come from? How do I get back there? So to protect return addresses, turns out is a very difficult problem. In fact, researchers and vendors have been working on this for decades, and so far every single software attempt to solve the problem has failed. Some attacker somewhere has come up with a technique or a method in order to break it and to be able to corrupt that return address. Fortunately, Microsoft has been working with Intel for the past couple years and continuing to do so to actually build a hardware solution that will protect these return addresses from being corrupted. And this actually requires new hardware and new CPUs to be built. And Microsoft has been partnering with Intel in order to build this feature so that when these chips become available and start shipping within computers, Edge will be able to support it as soon as it emerges. And the technology that is used to protect these return addresses is what we call a shadow stack. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time during this talk to explain and go into the details of what a shadow stack is, how it works, its merits, how it's broken, so on and so forth. But I will be around all day today. I'll probably mostly be upstairs. So when you're not listening to the other amazing talks we have and you have some free time, maybe at a break or lunch or after the conference, come find me and I'd be happy to talk about it. So let's go back to our map. We've already disrupted the attacker's ability to load their own code. We've already disrupted their ability to modify, generate code pages to create their own little blocks. And finally, with these last two mitigations, we prevent their ability to hijack the browser's code itself. Now, with these in place, we believe we've raised the bar to an unbelievable level in terms of exploiting the actual browser or exploiting Edge. We actually think that in order to properly exploit the browser now in an easier fashion will require new exploitation research and new techniques to be discovered. These mitigations in place in Edge are very disruptive to the attacker ecosystem. So to summarize the guards we've shipped, we have the two guards that prevent against attacks that are happening on the disk. This is our code integrity guard, which ensures or enforces that all of the code that is being loaded in the browser is actually signed by Microsoft, meaning we said that that code is okay to be loaded, and we allow it to be loaded. The second is arbitrary code guard, which prevents dynamic code generation, modification, and execution. And the second guards, which are designed to prevent attacks against memory, the first was control flow guard, which enforces code flow integrity on indirect function calls, and what I'm calling the fourth guard, because someone better hasn't named it, which enforces code control flow integrity on function returns. What's really cool about these mitigations is we believe our strategy is actually working. So this idea of applying mitigations and making it as difficult as possible to go from vulnerability to exploitation is a strategy that's being adopted across the entire company, across all of Microsoft products. It just so happens that the browser is a very popular target amongst attackers due to how many people use browsers, how much time we spend in the browsers, and how complicated they are. So Edge makes a great starting point for building and testing these mitigations to ensure that they're robust and that they're not going to be a hindrance on performance or compatibility or just in general break the web. So this chart here shows all of the Microsoft remote code execution vulnerabilities. This would be something like a browser vulnerability that we showed in step one of our little map from 2006 to 2016. And you may notice this shows sort of a troubling trend. We are seeing more and more vulnerabilities being found by attackers. And there's many reasons to explain this. Attackers are getting better. They're getting have better research. They're more well-funded. They have better tooling. Code is getting more and more complicated. So the number of vulnerabilities being found is actually going up. However, if you look at the same graph in terms of how many of these are being exploited, you notice the trend is actually going down. So even though there's more and more vulnerabilities being found every day in Microsoft products, the number of those vulnerabilities that are actually useful to be exploited that allow an attacker to actually do something, if you have a vulnerability but no exploit, there's really nothing you can do. You can't read files. You actually need the exploit to work and to run. That is actually going down. So they have more vulnerabilities to choose from, but they're having a harder time to actually exploit them, which means that our strategy of using our scissors and cutting off all of these paths, stopping all of the ways you take a vulnerability and go to exploitation, is actually working. And so we're very excited about this strategy, and a lot of these mitigations that we're building in the browser are going to extend across a lot of Microsoft's products, all the products that can use it. The browser in Edge is really where we're spearheading a lot of this work. And a lot of these mitigations are possible in Edge due to the relationship we have of working with the Windows team and the kernel team to help build these, working with the Visual Studio team and our compilers team. Without their partnership and their expertise, none of these mitigations would be possible. Microsoft's really in a unique position with Edge that allows us to deliver these great security features. However, we still need your help in a few areas. The first is always adopt the latest standards. The web standards are coming out. Not only do you get amazing new features like service workers, WebVR, all the cool stuff that you know and love, but our security mitigations are designed to work best with the latest standards. So things like legacy technologies, like we had an announcement with partnership with Adobe and other browser partners on removing Adobe Flash from Windows and from use in Edge. So moving off of those types of technologies into more modern web technologies, moving off of ActiveX and into more standardized web technologies will give you the best protections. The second bit is encourage your users to stay up to date. Microsoft Edge is updated on what we call Patch Tuesday, which is the second Tuesday of every month, just like the rest of Windows is. And that's where you're going to get all of our security fixes, some of the great new like performance improvements, reliability improvements, and these new guards. That's how you get access to them, is by staying up to date and ensuring that your users are up to date. The third is participate in our bug bounty. The rules and link to the bug bounty are provided here in this slide. We will pay upwards of $15,000 if you can find a remote code execution vulnerability or step one in that graph, in that map. So if you can find one of those, please send it to us and we'll pay you up to $15,000 for it. But as much as I'd love to see your vulnerabilities, please, please, please don't send them to me on Twitter. Please don't send them to me on Twitter. It makes for a very rough evening and morning for me. I encourage you strongly to send them to secure@microsoft.com. They are the experts who know how to handle the vulnerabilities. So if you see anything you believe to be a vulnerability, please don't hesitate to email secure@microsoft.com. They also have a PGP encryption key available so that you can encrypt the email you send to them. So thank you so much for listening to me talk about security a bit. I know that a lot of these features are things that you guys and girls might not see on a day-to-day basis while you're developing great websites, but just know that we're still thinking about you, we're thinking about your customers, and we're building great security features, features under the hood to help protect you and your users. So thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the summit.